Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett. Welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability. I'm here today with my partner, Fred. How's it going, Fred?
Hey, pretty good, Adam. How's it going?
Good, good. I was trying to think of more of a word of, when two cowboys join up and go out to cause trouble. I couldn't quite come up with it. As
Compadres, cohorts.
Compadres, there we go.
Compadres.
Yeah.
Instigators.
I almost said comrade. Yeah. Yeah, I was just a comrade, but I don't want to be associated with Russia at this point. I mean, just between the politics contaminated the election and just now getting booted at the Olympics for doping, I'm just like, no, comrade's not the right word.
Russia's not hosting the Winter Olympics this year. I don't even know where it is.
No, they got booted. No. They got caught, the state-funded doping program. So, you know, athletes will dope, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's state funded. They found that it's state funded in Russia. They all do it under state funding. So Russia as a whole is banned. All the athletes are banned from the Olympics.
From the Summer Olympics coming up?
From whatever the next one's coming up, the winter ones, right?
Yeah, I think the winter ones. But I had a vague feeling that Russia was hosting. Maybe they did the last one.
They did the last one.
Okay.
Yeah, which is where a lot of it came from. They were able to. Anyway, it's a whole. Anyway, it's crazy.
That's wild. Yeah. How do you tell a country, I think even more importantly, is the athletes, oh, by the way, your last 15 years of training and practice and sacrifice are for naught, you're not going.
Yeah. I guess take it up with your local legislator or congressman, because they're the ones who did it to you. I don't think you're allowed to do that in Russia, but.
Man, that's tough.
Yeah, I did hear there was a contingency where they may allow the Russian athletes to attend and to be in the competitions, but they don't get any scoring or medals, which is kind of weird. But I guess that's kind of maybe a little bit along the lines of what you're saying of like, well, they kind of had no choice. So at least let them show up and do it. I don't know. The whole thing's crazy.
Yeah.
But definitely goes against the spirit of it. But yeah.
The grand experiment to see how effective doping is then.
Right. Actually, I saw a funny comedian once was talking about the whole Lance Armstrong thing. And he was like, they're all doping. He's like, what does it matter? He's like, it's basically my doped up guy beat your doped up guy. Like it doesn't. He's like, it's still equal at this point. He's like, they've totally failed in regulating it. The top 20 guys in the Tour de France were all they found out, you know, like he's
That's
like,
right.
You can't even be in it if you aren't doped up. Like you've already eliminated those people. They didn't even make the cut. There's no way. So
yeah, it's kind of scary when you get to that level.
Yeah. Actually, what I'm excited to see is when we start doing the cyborg Olympics, right? Because we're already getting to that where amputees and stuff that have, you know, prosthetics and stuff, the prosthetic engineering is so good now that they're actually now considered to be at an advantage in some cases, not a disability.
Well, yeah, the last marathon I ran, I saw, you know, a dozen or so wheelchair entries, and the gun went off and we started and I never saw them again. They finished in record times. They are blazing through that.
Yeah. So I think next we'll see cyborg Olympics because like it was a runner that got disqualified because of how good they got his amputee. Those kind of like bow legs, you know, the springs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He was able to, they were like, oh, wait a minute.
He's amplified.
So I think at some point it'll be a combination engineering and physical athletic tests like car racing is, right? You know, where it's half engineering, half the driver. I think we'll see a cyborg Olympics at some point. Unlimited, right?
That's right. Yeah. I think there's Hollywood's doing movies on that, aren't they?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. So we were also talking about, I think we were trying to think of a title for this episode is You Make Me Feel Bad.
Yeah, that's a contender, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's what it'll be. People will know at this point because they will have clicked on it. But we were talking about how in our role, we have to sometimes be the killjoy and, you know, actually quite often. And you and I have actually experienced having people we're working with say, I've had people actually say, you make me feel bad. And my response is, that's kind of why you brought me in here. That's why I'm here.
I'm here to personally humiliate you and tell you how bad your engineering is. No, that's it's not what we're there for.
That's the trick. It's not personal. It's not personally humiliate you. It's that I'm here to, you know, to guide, and, you know, so that may involve redirection. And the results have been actually, the result of that conversation and where it led us to is very good. It does. I mean, I have redirected programs because of it. And, you know, an example is a program where they wanted to, you know, what reliability tools do we need to do and this and that. And I quickly identified, I'm like, the core skill sets and the expertise and what you're trying to develop is not at a point where there's a role that's not being filled in the design process. And this is what I see for this technology here and why every iteration you're doing is unstable with this one feature.
Mm-hmm.
And that reliability is not going to fix it or mature it. There's something more fundamental that's wrong. You need to fill that role. And the program actually stopped, and, you know, they're trying to fill that role, that role being that expertise contribution.
Right.
Because I'm like, we can't mature something that's not inherently stable to start. You know, reliability is about you have a design that really works really well, or, you know, really does what it's supposed to do well. And now we're looking at identifying, controlling variability, you know. So it was important for me to point out that, no, you messed up. There's a contribution to the technology development that wasn't there.
Right.
And they said, you hurt my feeling, the program manager. They're like, you hurt my feeling. They're being a little funny, but
yeah.
You know.
But you also had, you were in a position where they listened, right? And you had, I would suspect that you had some credibility already with that group, so that what you identified to them was probably a combination of the elephant in the room syndrome. They kind of all knew this already at some level, and you called it. Or it was that you've had a track record of when you identify an issue, it's well thought out and already put together, and they understand that. You're not just crying wolf, to use a range of different metaphors here. But there's also times when you walk into a room and you say, hey, you know, this is not going to work. And they all kind of just turn the other way and continue on with their meeting and ignore it.
Yeah, but I mean, I fired those customers, you know, in a sense where I have no, you're taking away a lot of why I do this. If you're asking me to give input, you're not going to do anything with it. It's not going to be effective. I mean, I have tons of other people to work with who are very eager to get my input and have it influence what they do. So if I get a sense that I'm in there for some other reason, just so they can say they hired a consultant or something, like, you're just wasting my time. I'm not, you know, it's, I kind of fire them. I'm like, I don't see why we're doing it. I mean, I'll give them a chance, but right, I'll be like, right, I don't see why we're doing this if my recommendations are filed away, or I don't understand, or I don't, you know, or I could say you maybe at the director level brought me in and want my input, but your boss, the VP, is, you know, dismissing it. So I don't see the value of what I'm doing if they're not on board, you know, or I have that conversation, but, you know, then if it just seems like, oh, okay, we'll try whatever, I'm like, I think we're done, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, as consultants, we kind of have that ability to say, you know, you hired me to do this, and I'm giving you this advice, and you're not listening, I'm out of here. You know, thanks for trying. But if that's your employment, if you're a reliability engineer or a quality engineer, or and you're part of the staff and this is your livelihood, it's not as easy to say, you know, I'm out of here. You might eventually want to get your resume put together if that's consistent. But there's a trick, though. I've been in groups where I was the brand new reliability engineer. I had no credibility, no background with these guys, whatever. And I looked at a product and I said, you know, that might be a problem. We should investigate that. And it was met with, we're smarter than you. This is our field, you know. Now, it was kind of the pat on the head, you know, thanks for contributing, now go away. To being able to later be able to deliver a message that said, you know, this might be an issue, and a team was formed and we solved it. So what I'm getting at is that for not the consultants, for our listeners, is if you find something, what's the right next step to make sure that your message is actually heard. I don't think going in and saying, oh, it's a big disaster, it's going to fall apart, it's going to explode. I think there's been Dilbert cartoons like that where they say, oh yeah, the quality director has been nailed to the ceiling because it exploded or something. I mean, how do you deliver bad news effectively? Right. I think that's my...
So here's the yes, it's a very different when you're inside the organization. Still, what you're doing, I think, is the same. It's a different, slower process where if you do truly, in the end, see no sincerity on the other side, you should leave. You're foolish to stay. It's just going to drain your soul if you care at all about reliability. But the process is different because the role is very different. As a consultant, you're coming in for a specific period of time, specific accomplishment, you're already being brought in because they've already decided you're the expert. I mean, they're going through great expense to bring you in. So you already have that credibility and you are expected to deliver, you know, concise direction.
Wait a second. Great expense. It took me a second to catch that phrase. How much do you charge? Now, I'll let you go with that. you're being brought in the door with credibility to start with, right?
Right.
They're paying you and they want to listen. There's already something there.
Well, somebody, I mean, usually, you know, for when I come in, it's VPs are signing the check. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they've said, hey, I'm bringing, you know, their credibility is being transferred.
Right. Well, I've had that happen also. And I walk up to the engineer I'm supposed to work with after seeing an email that I got copied on to the rest of the group going, we don't need no stinking consultants. They're like fleas. We'll never get rid of them.
Sure. But I mean, obviously that's an internal problem, you know, with the VPs not correcting that, but you know, not so that's different, right? When you're in the organization, it's harder. And I've been there too. When you're in the organization, it is important to get that credibility and that you aren't showing up so much with it. You usually I've talked about this before about, you know, that strategy, how to do it for, like, you know, for our listeners, people who are reliability engineers, lower mid level, or even starting to go up to higher level. You have to build that credibility slowly. And one of the big challenges with reliability is that whole idea of that reliability engineers don't do reliability. Everybody does it. And, you know, we guide the process and all that. Mm-hmm. Well, the problem there is then you get the label of not having skin in the game, right? So it's very important to start off by picking something small, being the person to jump in, roll up your sleeves and solve it. And people are like, oh, wow. OK, you know, they jumped in. They solved this one thing. OK, then you go on and on and on. And then you eventually, you know, people are like, no, when he gets involved, it kind of gets solved. You know, like, so you have to build up the credibility. That's, you know, that's a longer process. But then the second part about with it not working, you know, you have to try harder. You can't just do like as I described, where I'm like, look, guys, you brought me in here. I'm not going to just, you know, it has to be trying different strategies for fixing and making that connection. I mean, one analogy could be the difference between dating and being married, right? If you're dating and things aren't working, you just don't make another date. You know, if you're married and it's not working, you know, you try a lot of things to, you know, because you're in there, you're in the organization, you know, you work on a lot of ways to try to see if you can make that connection. It's a longer process if it's going to go separate ways.
So. All right. So let's make it more concrete. Let's say you're working on this newfangled product, right? And you take it, you get your first prototype, the team fires it up, and it's not even one that you can take to the lab and do anything with. And it smokes, right? Power supply fails, just smokes.
Right.
Maybe not catching on fire, but obviously something very wrong, and it could be design, it could be a bad component, it could be it was mishandled, it could be all kinds of stuff. At that point, you don't have to deliver the message. They're seeing it on their desk, right? And I think that's a spot where a savvy reliability engineer will say, you know, let's do some root cause analysis here. Let's kick this off. Here's the right set of questions to ask. You know, what could cause this problem? Let's open it up and not destroy the evidence, but let's step through this and find out exactly what went wrong so we don't have it happen again. And it could be keeping a cool head in the face of failure and not blaming anybody, not accusing anybody of anything, but saying, hey, let's get the facts. Let's find out what's going on. Let's fix it. Let's change. Let's improve our process. As opposed to you get your first prototype and you run down to the lab and it won't start. Right. And now you have to bring it back to the group and say, hey, it's broken. And you might do the failure analysis. That might be a good step because it's often a first step in trying to to solve a problem is understand it. But it's delivering the message back to a design team saying, no, your design's bad. You need, it's never going to work, is a tougher message to deliver if they don't already know it.
Well, that should be a skill set that all reliability engineers have, because that's where your value is. Your value is not telling them the obvious, you know, that it doesn't work. That's of no value. Your contribution is really, if you try to concisely put it, it's being, you're being engaged to generate design input, you know, as far as the development process goes, you measure reliability, but design for reliability, you're being engaged to give them input to help them make a better design. Mm-hmm. So coming back and saying it doesn't work, that's not input to make a better design. Coming back and your role should be like the detective, you know, the criminal detective, where if you look at a detective in a murder show, right? They come in, they're cool-headed, and they're using the expert techniques from their toolbox to collect all the right information to understand what happened. Mm-hmm, and that's your role. Your role is to say, okay, this is what's happened. I believe we should do this, this, and this. These are the observations I have so far, which makes me think this, this, and this. And you know, you should be saying things that direct actions, right? That's your role. It should be, I saw this. I've seen in the past from my experience that this could be this enamel coating isn't doing something right, or a bearing is this, or, you know, they're looking to your expertise the way you look to a detective to solve an issue. Mm-hmm, and like you said, you know, okay, I want to facilitate this type of root cause analysis. This is the right tool based on what happened. I want to, you know, so if you actually, if you're doing it right, you're the hero, right? Because they know that without your role, they would just be looking at something that's not working and like, ugh, how do we figure this out?
Right.
But you're, you know, that has nothing, the fact that it didn't work is an obvious observation. You're not telling them that. You should be seen as like the guy, the detective who's going to, everybody wants to solve the case. You have the tool sets to help with that.
That's right. And that's just one example, though, right? It's one example is where we do have a failure, and root cause analysis is a great set of tools to make that happen. Whereas in the design practice itself, we may help formulate a understanding of the use environment and how that affects the expected failure mechanisms. It would be another set of tools that we could bring to the table to help guide decisions. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to expand it beyond just failure analysis, but you're right. It's if we walk in and say, oh, that'll never work, you know, just close the door behind you because you're going the outside. Yeah. Nobody's going to listen to it. Like, oh, and that's well put, Adam, is like, you know, telling people the obvious doesn't really add any value. Providing a framework or a structure or a set of tools to help solve problems or prevent right. problems, it does.
Yep. Actually, it's funny. So picture my detective analogy. Mm-hmm. The detective shows up and they say, what do you think? He's like, he's dead.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming by. Yes.
That's right. I'm done here.
He's trying to go beyond that, right? Like, yeah, exactly, right? Like, what do you think? So. Exactly. That's not you're there as the detective because you have a tool set that is, you know, around either investigating or aiding in design and, you know, having closed loop feedback during the design process to mm-hmm. stay on track without having to go to those more expensive, complex stages of testing and test and fix.
It was one of the things I learned it a hard way as I was working with a inkjet printer group, and Ed was my primary contact. He was the lead engineer for the main circuit board. And he would just sigh when I would show up at his office. He would never schedule a meeting with me. He never actually wanted to be in the same room with me because I was just the bearer of bad news all the time. And I finally called him on it and said, you know, you don't seem happy to see me at all. And he goes, well, you only bring me problems. You only bring me, you know, things that aren't working, things that aren't done right, things that I have to do different. You bring me more work and no solutions. And you're right.
Well, he shouldn't be in that job. I mean, he shouldn't be in that position because you're a hero in a way, because these problems existed whether or not you find them or not at that stage. And the trick is, and the reason why we're experts, is we are taking very limited sample size, very unknown, a lot of unknown conditions, and getting to expose and see these failures that exist early on to when you really can do something about it. I mean, it's really, you know, you should have a cape on the back with a big R on it, because it's awesome when that happens. And I love seeing people begin to understand that. And I recently actually got to experience it. But, you know, that's the thing. He should be excited to see you come in and be like, oh, my God, are you going to show me the future? You know what I mean? You're showing him the future.
That's
you know?
A hard, but we're walking in telling him how ugly his baby is the whole time.
But his baby's ugly. Somebody, you know, like it doesn't like that's the problem.
So it's his fault. Defects. It wasn't ugly. Me. It was him.
You're helping. No, you're helping. He's going to find out it's ugly. So here's the thing. If I come up to you and I ask you, you know, how do I look? I'm, you know, Fred, you and I are going out to dinner. I mean, I know we're doing our marriage thing again, but you and I are going to dinner. I'm like, Fred, how do I look? And you look at me and you're like, oh man, he's like, his shirt's on his button wrong, where you're one button off.
Right.
But you don't tell me because you don't want to hurt my feelings. Everybody's going to see that his shirt's one button off, and that sucks. And I would have really liked to have known when I could have fixed it, Fred, you know, like your role is you tell me it's off and I'm like, thank you. you know, like, thank you for telling me before we walked out of the house, you know, like, so that's the difference in mindset. I'm not going to blame you for saying you made me feel ugly or you know, like, I'm like, no, you pointed out something I can fix now. So,
you know, but Adam, you know, the reality is that we work with a bunch of people that they take their design of their product very personally. So we say, you know, this might not meet our customer's expectation, even gently can be construed as personal. And I think,
it is personal. It totally is personal. And, you know, it's, but they should care enough about it to want, you know, it's certain people, right? It's the same thing where you do personal reviews at the end of the year, right? You know, you do your annual review, you know, and people are given feedback. And if they're defensive about it, that's a bad employee. They shouldn't be in, you know, like that's somebody who's not going to get promoted or do well. If you tell them, well, we feel that you did it, and you're like, no, I don't. Or, you know, that's not somebody you can work with. You want the person that's like, oh, okay, I'll think about that. That's interesting. And oh, that does make sense, because I was kind of finding this hard to do, and this might be the reason why. And that's why I started off by saying they shouldn't be in that role. You know, if this guy is a manager or something, and every time you go to his office, that's his reaction, he shouldn't be in that position, because the company's throwing away the opportunity for really good feedback at a critical time. And
I'm not really happy with that. I understand it. I agree with you 100%. I also don't think it's helpful to our audience. Of if you're in that position, one is to recognize it. But what do you do? I mean, we can only control what we convey and bring across. And I think back to doing the due diligence and doing the root cause analysis, for example, finding out why the person's dead, what happened in this murder, that adds value. I think that helps to build the credibility. Is that enough, though, to swing the day so that people are saying, hey, you know, you brought us this issue, thank you? Is building the credibility slowly, as you outlined earlier, is that the path to do that?
You can't just, this goes back to, you can't just bring the issue. You should bring the issue and next actions, right? Like you should be, so yeah, you can't just walk in the office and walk by his door, throw something that's smoking on his desk and be like, this doesn't work.
Well, Ed did call it a drive-by shooting feeling. He always accused me of doing drive-by shootings.
Okay, well then I'll offer you some feedback if you're open to it. Don't do that. Okay. Like, okay.
Where were you 20 years ago? I would have done so much better.
If you're doing drive-by shootings, then you're the guy, you know? Yeah. No, I was taking this in the context of that you were bringing him back results with some, I usually am excited, right? And they're like, why is he so happy? You know? And it's because I'm so excited. I'm like, you don't understand. This failure was out there. We just got crazy lucky that our testing, we caught it now. So you know what I mean? Like, get how this is, you know? And I hope to see their eyes light up like, oh my God, you're right. You know? So, you know, that's the, but you said, what can somebody do about it? So it might take some bravery, but if you're talking with a person who you're trying to give them good, you know, input and suggestions, and they're like, ugh, I just wanted to ignore this, you should be finding a way to navigate around them and be like, hey, this guy doesn't get it. You know, like if you really care as a liability participant on the team, you should now be talking about that person and be like, look, I've tried to communicate with them. They don't do it. They always try to put it under the rug to their manager or to a peer or to whatever, and be like, this doesn't work. He can't be in the loop with this information, you know? And then if it turns out the problem's more, you know, beyond that to where the people you're talking to are like, well, I don't, you know, it turns out it's his boss with the same attitude.
Right.
Then you start thinking about working in a different environment. I mean, why, you know, why stay there? Because, you know, so anyway,
right.
And
yeah, you know, I'd give the credibility part, you know, I you outlined something at the start was, you know, find, if you find something, it's then what's the next action? What's the likely causes? Bring your expertise to the table, not just the problem. I think that starts the discussion. I think it chips away at people that just don't get it as they start to understand. Oh, and I think your phrase is probably worth, that might be the better title is, you know, this problem was out there.
Yeah.
And we got lucky and found it.
Yeah, lucky. Yeah, we got so happy. You know, it's such a great thing. And the funny thing is that there's that moment was captured in for me once, and it actually ended up in Popular Mechanics. And
yeah, we've talked about this photo. You got to put that in the show notes.
I have a picture of that in my workshop, in my lab and workshop of that frame. My wife actually did it because she knows I just love that moment that I can't believe the camera caught it, and that they actually quoted the Marine who was running it, who said, "Oh, it sucks that I broke it." He totally missed the whole point of the day. The whole day was, my objective was to find out how it breaks, you know?
And, right. If it would have just crashed through that tree, if it would have been like a half inch smaller, it would have gone right through. Yeah. And you would have never found this out.
Right. If it turned out, you know, later on we experimented, we're like, oh, wow, you know, it was right in that sweet spot where it doesn't break it and doesn't stop it. It gets jammed in there. That was going to happen sometime in its life and usage. And we were pretty lucky on that one day to catch it. I mean, what are the odds, right?
Yeah, with
and
cameras.
It was an easy fix. It was an easy design improvement, you know? So,
Yeah. I got to go to the lab with you someday and just watch you see stuff break. It's probably worth watching.
I definitely take a lot of pleasure in it. So it's a lot of fun. How does this work? I'll smash it. I mean, yeah, I stay true to my 6-year-old in me.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Yeah.
But we should probably wrap it up here. I think there's still, I think, some fuzziness in this topic. So I'm going to ask our listeners if, you know, if you've got some advice or ideas of how do you crack this? How do you go from being the deliverer of bad news to a welcome contributor to the design and to the development process. And it is a skill. I think you mentioned it, Adam, it's a skill we all need to know. And so head over to reliability.fm. You can find this episode and other podcasts in the network and leave us a message or a comment or something. Please do join the conversation. Let us know what your thoughts are on this topic.
All right, Fred. Well, thanks for taking time to talk. And I also noticed that we got so excited, I forgot to give us a pause to do a small break. So we'll do that real quick right now, and we'll conclude with that.
Hi, it's Fred here. Are you considering becoming an ASQ certified reliability engineer or just interested in expanding your reliability engineering skill set? Mastering the full body of knowledge takes deliberate practice, which means you need a guide and feedback, a coach. The online and on-demand CRE prep course, along with my personal support, will help you pass the exam and improve your reliability skill set. To get started, go to ascendoreliability.com/go/CRE.
All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. And we look forward to talking with you again soon. Thank you, Fred.
Yeah, thanks, Adam.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.